Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
April 3rd, 2007, The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, tips from great photographers. I'm just back from Las Vegas, had a great time at the WPPI show, and that's a wedding and portrait photographers show. I have to tell you, WPPI, if you're ever thinking about going to an intimate yet really full-bodied trade show, this is a good one. It happens every year. It has an expo floor where all the big players show up. You have Canon, you have Nikon, you have a bunch of software vendors such as Adobe and Apple, and then you have all sorts of people that are doing lighting and backdrops and, you know, other types of software and so forth. It's a pretty excellent show, and there's lots to do and see there, and the speakers are fabulous. They line up some of the best speakers in the business. They're all photographers. They really know photography. They're experienced. Most of them are working right now, so they're not just, you know, doing the teaching circuit sort of thing. And the way that they set up the day at WPPI is that you have class first thing in the morning, usually starts about 8:30, and you have a class until about 10:30 or so. And then they open up the trade show floor at 11, and the trade show goes from 11 to 4, which is really nice. So you have plenty of time to browse all the booths and talk to people and look at lenses and try new accessories and all the good stuff. And then at 4:30, they start classes again, and classes go from about 4:30 to about 9:30. And there's often a keynote presentation and some special events and usually a party or two thrown in there. So it's a nice, long, full day, but it has a really good pace, and you don't feel like you're missing out on something if you go to the expo, or that if you're in classes all day, you feel like you're missing out at looking at that latest lens you have your eye on. So it's an excellent show that way. Had a very good time, and if you're looking for a good photography trade show for next year, you might want to look up WPPI and sort of think about if that might be a good way for you to go to get enthused about your craft, to learn new techniques, and of course to see new equipment. I mean, you get the whole deal in one place. What I'd like to touch on today are just a couple things from the show, because as I promised in the last show, I was going to bring back some of the goodies from Las Vegas. First, some impressions. One of the things that I noticed is that a lot of photographers that are working, who were sitting next to me in classes or who I might have informal conversations with at the expo, a lot of them still haven't made the decision yet about their workflow. In other words, they have some sort of workflow that they're using now that they've been using for some time. It usually involves Photoshop or Photo Mechanic, something like that. And then they sort of cobbled together a filing system, maybe a backup system. Most of them really aren't keywording as much as they should, or even rating their images as much as they should. And they're just now beginning to learn about aperture, about Lightroom, about, you know, light zones product, about these new sort of integrated photography management applications. Now, both Apple and Adobe knew that. You know, they've done their market research, and they were really duking it out at the show. Both of them were doing demos the whole time. It was very important to them that photographers that were doing lectures and workshops and so forth were using one of their applications. Adobe had Julianne Koss there, and she did a two-hour deep dive into Lightroom one night. It was very interesting that both Apple and Adobe had identified that so many photographers haven't really made up their mind yet about how they're going to manage their pictures, especially in terms of Lightroom or Aperture. And then also that the photographers themselves, you know, really hadn't, I mean, maybe it's because they're busy, maybe because, you know, learning new software is hard. I'm not sure. But I was a little surprised about how many photographers really hadn't made the move into the next generation photo management software. So that was one observation that I thought was pretty interesting. Then we get to the photographers themselves who were speaking. The first one I want to talk about is Art Wolf. Art is a very famous nature photographer. And he has a new television show coming out that's going to be on public television that I think is going to be pretty interesting. The show is going to be called Travels to the Edge. And I think what's different about Art's show, at least based on the clips that he showed us at WPPI, is that not only is he going to take us to some very exotic places that are very beautiful to photograph, and show us pictures from them, we're really going to get a photographer's point of view about tackling these assignments, about how he gets these great shots that he gets. And then the pictures themselves are just absolutely stunning. Now, one of the interesting things about Art is shooting primarily in digital now. I would say almost exclusively. I think he's made the transition. But he really liked the color palette of the Fujichrome slide films. That's what he used for years and years. So his post-production workflow is to emulate the look that he gets with Fujichrome with his digital images. And I thought that was kind of interesting because I tend to think as of the emulsions as one, you know, type, you know, one medium, and then digital as another. And, you know, my inclination is more to let each medium be its own thing and bring out the most in it. But I was fascinated by the fact that, you know, Art, what he's really looking to do when he does his post-production of his images is to emulate the way that Fujichrome looked. Art gave us some good shooting tips also. One of them was how he captures aurora borealis when he is lucky enough to run into them. And he has a very specific setup that he uses. He sets his ISO to 400. He goes with 30-second exposures. He opens up his lens to f2.8. And he pre-focuses, actually before it gets dark, if he can, on something where he gets a good clean infinity instead of just trying to focus the camera in the really low light situation when the borealis are actually happening. And he had some really fantastic shots. He says that, you know, he's run into them all over the world. It's not just way up in the northern hemisphere, as we've heard sometime. But I thought that was really cool that he actually shared his actual settings for when he captures these. ISO 400, 30-second exposure at f2.8, and tries to get a pre-focus when he can. Now, Art shoots Canon, and his two favorite lenses, he loves both the 70-200 f2.8 and then the 24-70 f2.8. So he's carrying some pretty heavy glass around with him. Those of you that are Canon shooters, by the way, I've done a little research. The 70-200 L series lens in the Canon line, time and time again, is one of the most popular lenses for professional photographers. Now, there's a couple different flavors of that lens. There's the 70-200 f2.8, and it comes in both an image-stabilized and a non-image-stabilized version. The image-stabilized version of the f2.8 70-200 is a very expensive lens. I think it gets up around $1,600. So, and it's also a very big, heavy lens, as you can imagine, because it's f2.8 through the whole zooming range there. Now, that's a lot of light gathering, and you need a lot of glass in order to do that. However, there's another lens in that lineup that a lot of people really like, but you don't hear as much discussion about it. And they also make, Canon also makes a 70-200 f4, f4 through the whole range. Now, this f4 lens is beautiful. It is sharp as a tack. It has all the wonderful features. It looks very similar to the f2.8 version, except it's smaller. It's much more lightweight. You put it on a Digital Rebel or you put it on a 5D, it just feels good. You don't need a tripod collar to shoot with it, in order to get the balance right and everything. And it comes in both an image stabilized and a non-image stabilized form. If you get the non-image stabilized version of the F470-200, you can get it for around $550, which is a pretty good price for a world-class L lens. And if you get the image stabilized version, it has a very good image stabilizer, up to 4 stops. And you can get that for around $1,100. If you don't need that extra stop of light, but yet you still want, a top of the line 70-200 lens, take a look at the F4 version too. And if you get a chance to actually hold them and shoot with them, you'll notice a big difference in lugging around that F4 all day as opposed to the much heavier F2.8. So that, there's a little digression, but I only bring that up because that lens was just coming up over and over and over again last week. It really, the 70-200 for a lot of photographers is their meat and potatoes. Now, I have the F4 version, the non-stabilized version, which I just love. It's absolutely one of my favorite lenses. I'm tempted someday to pony up the extra dollars and get the image stabilized version. But right now, I'm looking at that new 16-35 f/2.8 that's coming out, and that might be where my money from my lens cookie jar goes. One other thing I want to mention from Art's talk before I move on is that Art is very much one of those photographers that shoots at the edges of the day. And his shots are very saturated. They're very spectacular. And he's the guy that will get out of his sleeping bag at 5 in the morning on a mountaintop to go get in position and shoot a sunrise coming over a peak at, 14,000 feet. He's the guy that will stay out late at night, and despite the weather, in order to get that spectacular twilight shot in a location that he's scouted out earlier in the day. So he's definitely a margins guy. And one of the things that, we haven't talked as much about this, I actually believe you can get a great shot any time of day, depending on obviously what you're shooting and the type of day it is will have some influence on that. But I think that, great photography can happen any time of day. However, if you're the type of shooter that really likes those super saturated shots, who really likes sweet light and, likes color in the sky and, the whole deal, then you really do have to go the extra mile to get those shots. That was something that was really clear when I was listening to Art Wolf talk, is that he is the guy that is willing to go the extra mile. And, his shots, show it. And he just has beautiful shot after shot. Many of them caught at the margins of the day. Something to keep in mind if that, you're in the mood to go get a spectacular shot, you really want something that's unique, find a great subject. It can be a natural thing. Like, for instance, he went to Hawaii and shot, volcano, not erupting, of course, but, there's active volcanoes there with the bubbling lava and sometimes spewing out sparks and so forth. So he just didn't go shoot that activity. He went and found a spot where he could shoot it at sunset and get both, a spectacular subject and a spectacular condition to record it in. And that's really what Art Wolf's all about. And it's something to keep in mind if you want that kind of shot, that kind of just, oh my gosh, spectacular sort of shot. You do have to go the extra mile often to get those. Now I have some more tips for you from another photographer, a different type of photographer. His name's Joe Busink. And Joe is a wedding and portrait photographer, a very well-known one. In fact, Dennis Reggie did his introduction for his talk at WPPI, and And he and Dennis shoot together often. So I have some really good tips. And actually, I even have a nice sound clip from Joe that I'm going to run with probably my favorite tip from him. Real quick before I do that, we need to do a little virtual camera club business. We've got some hot stuff going on. First of all, last month's photo assignment for March, self-portrait, that's in the books. I'm working on it right now, and I got to tell you, this is a fun photo assignment. This is really a good one, and I'm going to, as soon as I get this thing posted, obviously I'll let everyone know on the website, thedigitalstory.com. I'll do my usual post with the whole deal, but I got to tell you, you guys really rose to the occasion for this self-portrait assignment. I'm really proud of you, and I just love a lot of the shots. And, you know, part of the fun is not only seeing, you know, these creative self-portraits, but you get to see some of the members of our virtual camera club. Not bad stuff at all. This month's assignment, I'm going to let you get back behind the camera where you're more comfortable. I appreciate you sort of stepping out for 1 month, but now we're going to get you back behind the camera. I have a fun assignment for this month, too. Window to the Soul. Window to the Soul. That's this month's photo assignment. It's the photo assignment for April. Now, obviously, you know, window to the soul, that is a phrase that we use in English a lot for the eyes. You know, the eyes are the windows to the soul. And so, you know, obviously shots that involve the eyes seemed sort of a natural place to start for this assignment, especially eyes that are really revealing, really telling, really expressive. But then I think there are other twists to this assignment that you can do also. So we'll talk about, you know, that a little bit more in podcasts throughout the months. You know, I want to try to keep the creative juices going here. But Window to the Soul, that is the photo assignment for April. Now, another thing that's coming up real soon is our 100th grab shot. We're in the high 90s right now. I'm usually trying to run at least one a week. Sometimes I get a second one in. We're coming up to the 100th grab shot, and I have a little something special lined up for that 100th grab shot. I think you're going to like it. Those of you that have been contributing grab shots, I really appreciate it. And if you haven't heard from me yet, or if you haven't seen your shot online, don't give up, because believe me, I've got something fun in store. And for those of you that haven't contributed yet, or if you're sitting on one that needs to come in, make sure you go to the submissions page at thedigitalstory.com. Read about the specs on how to submit your grab shot and try to follow them if you can. Lately, people have been kind of wandering outside of what the requirements are. It helps me a lot if you know, do keep them, the grab shots, to 400 pixels wide, because it makes it easier for me to process them in the morning when I do the posts. But at any rate, go to the submissions page, just bone up on how to send it in. It only takes a few minutes, and then get those things in. And we'll be coming up to the 100th grab shot real soon. That's going to be a lot of fun. And well, I won't say anything more about it until we get a little bit closer. I also want to thank our sponsors, Boinx Software, B-O-I-N-X, the makers of Photo Magico. They have 2.0 out. It's a terrific piece of software. It's great for making, you know, really the ultimate slideshow, and it runs on a Mac. And also the good folks over at ExpoDisc, who make the ExpoDisc that's for custom white balance. And helps you just get accurate color in almost any kind of lighting. I don't know what I'd do without mine. Thanks to both of them for standing behind the Digital Story and helping us keep this virtual camera club going. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about another photographer I had a chance to listen to at the show and interview also. His name is Joe Busink. And by the way, I'll put links to both Art Wolf and Joe in the show notes. I did a post on Art Wolf, and I'm also going to do another podcast for the Inside Aperture site with Joe, where I have even more information than what I'm going to share with you today. So I'll put links to all that stuff in there. But anyway, Joe is terrific. He's a very passionate photographer. And his key to success when he shoots weddings and portraits and so forth is really twofold. One is that he has tremendous empathy for his client. He really gets to understand and appreciate what the client is going through at the time, usually a bride, groom, family members, really tries to put himself in their shoes and feel what they would want to see when they look at their wedding pictures, and then reach down and touch, you know, the artist that's inside of him, then to even take that to another level. So not only do they get to see the shots that they know they want to see, those expressive moments and so forth, then he adds, you know, another level of surprise and, you know, really satisfaction to the whole deal. He's really a terrific photographer. And so I asked him a little bit, you know, we spent some time talking, well, how do you spot those shots? And I was particularly interested because a lot of times the way those great shots come for me is when I'm in a zone. But yet when you're a wedding photographer, you know, you have to interact with clients and so forth. So he had a couple good tips. One of his tips that I thought was really cool is something he's been doing lately is that he becomes the second shooter at a wedding. And I have a podcast titled The Second Shooter. If you really want to know more about that, I think you should listen to that podcast because it really kind of goes into the whole deal. But he becomes the second shooter. He has one of his assistants be the primary shooter. Now, the bride knows, you know, who she's working with, really, and who the boss is. But the way he presents himself during wedding day is the second shooter. So his assistant does the group shots. His assistant goes around to the tables and gets the shots. His assistant's doing all of that, acting as the primary photographer. And then what Joe does is Joe wanders around sort of, you know, nondescript with his lens, his fast lens, his fast 2.8 lens and no flash. And he gets all the candids, all the tender moments, and he's free to do the artistic side of shooting because his assistant is taking care of all the standard sort of shots. And I thought this was really interesting stuff. Now, another thing that I thought was interesting is this process he's gone through over the years on how he develops his eye so he can spot those great shots and then react to them quickly. And a lot of times, the really great shot, he says, comes before the subject expects it. So, for instance, if you're going to take a portrait of somebody and, you know, they're expecting you to, say, smile and all that sort of stuff and look at the camera. What he'll do is he'll have the camera up, and the subject is just sort of coming around to getting ready, and he'll shoot, 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 and then he'll say, you know, smile, and then grab that shot too. And a lot of times, the shot right before they're expecting the shutter to click is a shot that really captures the essence of that person. Now, he has these cat-like reactions when he's shooting, so I asked him a little bit, well, Joe, how do you do that? How do you, you know, train yourself so that you can spot these shots and then jump on them before the moment slips away? So I have a little clip right now, and let's listen to see and hear what Joe has to say.
I've been teaching myself for the past 12 years how to see, and not just with my eyes, but with my heart. So one of the strengths I have at weddings is to see the emotion of the wedding. And when I'm not at a wedding, what I tend to do is continue practice seeing. And I might be in a mall or a supermarket, and I will walk around, and if I see a moment, I will snap my fingers, or I will say click in my head, or I say, that's it, that's the shot. And I do this because what I'm training myself to do is that I'm training my brain to see the moment and to respond to it. The response is a physical one with the snapping of the fingers, or a verbal one where I say click to myself. And then when I actually come on a Saturday to a wedding, I have a camera in my hand. So now when the brain sees the moment or the heart feels the moment, I just reach out and I grab the shot. I no longer do the click, or I don't snap my fingers anymore, but it's the camera that I literally jump out there and shoot with. And often I don't even get the camera to my eye. I see the moment so fast, and I just react to it. And I think that's the practice. I'm trying to react to the moments, because there are times where I have a second or third shooter on the dance floor with me, and he or she might have the camera in the nook of their arms as they're looking onto a beautiful moment that's unfolding in front of their faces, and they're smiling from ear to ear. And I know the minute they're smiling, they're onto a moment, and I want to smack them upside the head because the camera is still in their arm. They should have been reacting to it and shooting. And I think that's what practice comes in. And I'm a work in progress. I will always be a work in progress. I will never get this down. And if I ever thought I did, it's it for me. You know, I think I'm done as an artist. So it's something I just continue to do. And the more I do it, the more things I see.
I thought that was a really, really good tip. And it's something that I'm actually going to start using myself. And because I love the notion of constantly training yourself to look for great photos. And even though you might not always have a camera with you, you can practice your reflexes to those moments so that when you do have a camera, you can get them. Now, another thing that Joe talked about that I thought was also pretty good stuff is he keeps his camera setup really simple. For instance, when he's shooting, almost all of the time, he is in what he calls professional mode, P for program mode. He has his camera set up for the white balance and so forth that he wants. But a lot of times, quite honestly, it's auto white balance, and he'll be shooting in RAW mode. And the thing about it is that he doesn't want to be thinking about his camera. He knows what his camera is going to do. And for instance, if he's in a situation where there's backlighting, then all he does is, you know, tip the lens down a little bit, lock in the exposure on an area that is more what he wants, pull the camera back up and take the shot instead of, you know, really fiddling around with the different settings on the camera. So he likes to work really quickly like that. And that keeps him in the moment, that keeps him capturing great shots. His cameras can do the work. And then when he's in post-production, if he needs to pull something up or move something back a little bit, he can do that if he has to. But he's very much all about keeping the camera itself an extension of your vision and not getting caught up with switching around on settings all the time, especially if it causes him to lose a shot. For instance, if he's in manual mode, a 15th of a second at, f5.6, and then runs outside to grab a shot and forgets to change it back to program mode and shoots at those same settings in bright sunlight, then he's probably going to lose those shots. Those will probably be unrecoverable. So I really liked that other bit of advice that he gave. Speaking of equipment, so I had to ask Joe about what his favorite lenses are. And it's always a great question, right? So he loves the 24-70 f2.8. He also shoots Canon, by the way. So he loves the 24-70 f2.8. The 70-200, 2.8, and he's primarily an existing light photographer. So you can see why he would want to spend the extra money for these faster lenses and lug them around. He is trying to shoot without flash most of the time. He also has been using the 85 f1.2 and the 50 1.2. So he's carrying around some serious glass. But, you know, this is also a guy that gets, you know, $15,000 just for shooting the wedding, not to mention what he charges for the prints afterwards. So, you know, he's bringing in the money. He's investing that money in the type of equipment that allows him to get the shots that he likes. Okay, well, that's some pretty good stuff, wouldn't you say? It was quite a show. I had a great time. I'm off to Photoshop World now, and I'll be speaking at Photoshop World in the O'Reilly Media booth, and I'll be out and about. I think I'm going to have some pretty good stuff to report from there. Big topics at Photoshop World are going to be, obviously, the release of CS3, and I'm sure a lot of people will be talking about how to get used to the new interface and all the new features that are in it. And I think there'll be a lot of discussion about Adobe Lightroom also. So it's going to be a big Adobe week, Photoshop World in Boston. Hope to have some good tidbits for you. In the meantime, while I'm doing that, I hope you're out getting some good shots. Start working on the photo assignment for this month, Window to the Soul. Get those grab shots in, go take pictures, have a great time, and then come back here next week and we will do this again. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.